Blog Talk Radio.
September, some interesting events happened in history on this date. In 1348, again, the Jews get blamed for a lot of things. Jews in Switzerland were accused of poisoning the water wells. And this is the origin of Jews having to wear a badge. In 1431, a Roman Catholic cardinal, that's the second most powerful position in the Roman Catholic Church, a Cardinal Cusa, orders Jews to wear a badge to indicate they were Jewish. And then back to our country, the Benedict Arnolds, we still have them around in the media, in Congress, in the military. 1780, Benedict Arnold, who had been a hero at the Battle of Quebec and the Battle of Saratoga in the Revolutionary War, felt he didn't get the credit that he felt he earned and deserved. So he became a traitor. He sold plans to the fort at West Point, which is now our military academy for the training of Army officers. He gave them to the British. Of course, then Nathan Hale on the other end, who was spying for General Washington, got caught and was hanged on this date. In 1784, we had the first newspaper printed in this country. It's called the Penn's Packet and Daily Advertiser. Boy, has the media print really gone down. We'll get into that. And then in 1823, and of course this is relevant to the two Mormon candidates for the Republican presidential nomination, Moroni, I don't know quite who he is or what he is, he first appeared to Joseph Smith, who was the founder of the Mormon religion. And I guess there were other appearances, and Brigham Young was, Joseph Smith was killed by Illinois residents in, I think, Nauvoo, southern Illinois, and Brigham Young took over the leadership of the Mormons and brought them out to Utah. Of course, earlier this, I think our last show, we had the best man, which got into, used a character named Brigham Anderson from Utah, who was a U.S. senator, was being homosexually blackmailed. Let's see what else today. And then we have the first black. The term in those days were known, blacks were known as Negroes. 1872, John Henry Conyers. I don't think he's related to Conyers, the congressman from Detroit, who was also a funeral director. The first black candidate was accepted in the U.S. Army training school, officer training school at West Point. And then in 1893, this is relevant to us today, the first Frank Duryea drove the first gas-propelled automobile, and then a few years later they set up a corporation, Duryea, to manufacture automobiles. This is about the same time that Daimler in Germany was tinkering with and building what became the great Mercedes-Benz cars. Among the birthdays today, here's another guy who was given a hard time, Savonarola. He was a monk, and he's accused of heresy, and he was burned at the stake. This was 1452. And then the guy who invented, getting back to roads and cars, the guy who invented the asphalt that we ride on today, John McAdam, was born today in 1756. And then those of us who love music, and we're talking about UFOs and planets and Jupiter, Gustav Holst was born today, great composer. He became a vegetarian. His daughter became a musician in her own right. Holst also wrote other music. Some of it was had a mystic Hindu patina, I guess you could say, to it. And well, unfortunately, I didn't have time to do any clips for you, which come out of our music library. And then one of the worst leaders of modern Nigeria, Kwame Nkrumah, was born today. And then we had the son of Mary Martin, Larry Hagman. He was born today in 1931. And then we had Melvin Van Peebles, a black playwright, a great creative playwright. He was born today. Leonard Cohen, the Canadian singer-composer, was born in Montreal today. And Bill Curtis, you've probably seen him on American Justice, and he used to be on CBS in Chicago. He was born today. Hamilton Jordan, I think he's dead. He was Jimmy Carter, is one of his political advisors, consultants. And those of you who like those horror books and films, and of course about the dog Cujo, Stephen King was born today. Among the deaths, getting back to Benedict Arnold, while Benedict Arnold was betraying the Revolutionary Congress, and which appointed him, and the revolutionaries were trying to free the 13 colonies from Britain and George III, he got blamed for everything, Nathan Hale was hanged by the British for being a spy, and we get that famous quote that you learned in grammar school, "I have only one life to give for my country." But again, as I repeatedly said, and based on my own experience, both abroad and dealing with foreign diplomats, meeting KGB people, although they wouldn't admit at the time and that who they were or what they were, Americans have never understood espionage, that it's a dirty, necessary business. It's been called the second oldest profession, and not without a lot of justification. And this goes on. It's necessary. Even friends spy on other friends. Our allies, our friendly countries, spy on what we are doing. And, of course, the worst spying that's going on is economic spying, which is done by the Red Chinese. And here's another character which we prefer to forget. Anthony Comstock died at age 71 in New York City. He's a guy that started, him and Carrie Nation started these crazy blue laws and the ban alcohol, sex, education, a lot of things, a lot of the worst of the Puritans, as Cole Porter once wrote in his song, "Plymouth Rock should have landed on the Pilgrims instead of they on it." And then we had one of the worst dictators in South America's history, and Anastasio Somoza was assassinated on this day in 1956. And then those of you remember the Beverly Hillbillies and some other films, like Sergeant York, I think he was in this, and Task Force with Gary Cooper. Walter Brennan, who died at 80, he was best known in his later years for the Beverly Hillbillies. I'm pretty sure that's what he was in. And that's about it. I'm talking about media morons, and I've used that term. People say, well, what do you mean? Well, based on my own experience, these are the people in both the corporate and the alternative and underground press who lie, distort, and omit information and stories that they write about And when they're called upon to correct or clarify, they refuse. And some of them say, well, I don't have time, I'm on deadline. And if they don't dismiss you and say, well, are you a lawyer? Are you a doctor? Are you you know, government official? They don't willing to check you out to see what you're saying. It has, is accurate? Is it true? Is it in the national interest? So, you know, they're just dismissive, and they wonder why people don't trust the media less and less, and you see more and more newspapers still remaining in the racks on the street. And it's not because they've raised the price. It's because of the content and the coverage. When I bring up the fact that these lies, distortions, and omissions, for instance, one of the biggest rackets in this country, and we don't focus on it because we've been conned that these so-called nonprofit organizations are truly nonprofits. They're not. They're non-taxpaying. You can look at a 990, which is the IRS form for reporting of charitable organizations. You'd be shocked at some of the salaries, the bennies, the self-dealing that goes on in some of these organizations, the lifestyle, the houses that are bought, I think it's Goodwill. They pay for the housing of their executive in one of the counties. I think it's San Mateo County, if I'm not mistaken. And some of these bogus nonprofits, and that's my turn for them, even pay for the education of the executive's children. Not only that, they run political organizations which work to elect and reelect politicians and political operatives who will, once they get in office, they try to control the federal and foundation funds coming into a city or county, and then they dispense these to their friends. Influence peddling, you might call it. And also, they make campaign contributions, political campaign contributions, to politicians and office holders who will give them federal, state, and foundation monies. Also, some of these organizations are set up specifically to go out and get votes for politicians and office holders who, again, will steer federal funds, state funds, and foundation funds to the organization. So they, one hand washes the other. And they're all in the trough together. But you know, when some people got wised up on this, especially taxpayers, and said, well, I'd like to see your financial records. And even employees of some of these organizations, among the scams that go on, that they don't even pay the operatives of some of these organizations who will show you the records. They take the withholding out of their employees' checks, but they do not remit these deductions to the proper agencies, the state, the federal government. So liens are filed automatically, but nobody asks where is the money and why wasn't it remitted at the time it was taken out of the employee's check. And some of these outfits are bankrupt and nobody knows where the money is, so the government files liens for money that they may not get and probably won't get. But you as a citizen have a right to go into a nonprofit organization, and don't be rude or aggressive or up in their face, and say, I'd like to see your 990s. And you have to do this within business hours, and you have a right to either copy it yourself if there's a copy machine, or have them copy it for you and charge you a nominal rate, like up to 25 cents a page. Or you can check with your state department that oversees charitable trust section. Usually it's in either the state attorney general's office or the controller's office, one of those offices on the state level. I think only one state does not have this, and I think it's Wyoming because they don't have that many charities. That's the last time I looked. Now, one of the reasons I talk about corrupt media people is because I have seen, especially in the Stephen Mary case and other cases, where media people got a low-income, affordable condo. And we exposed that. And this guy did a trash job and lied about what happened to U.S. Navy sailor Stephen Mary. So I'm, but a famous case which I'm familiar with because I grew up in Cook County, Illinois. The in the movie Al Capone, the 1950, I think it's 59 movie, with Rod Steiger. This is the best one, and Martin Balsam and James Gregory. there's a they fictionalized the reporter's name as Keeley, but in the fact was his name was Jake Lingle, L-I-N-G-L-E. He was buried in the Catholic cemetery on Mount Carmel, which is known as the Gangsters Boot Hill. Also, all the archbishops and bishops of Chicago Archdiocese are also buried there. It's a strange, and Al Capone is buried there. So I took these were audio clips that I used in the lectures that I gave. And the first one is when Al Capone meets this guy, this newsman. He's called Keeley, but actually it's Jake Lingle in reality. And this is how that first encounter went.
Al Capone from Brooklyn.
Hi,
Matt Keeley, the smartest reporter in Chicago.
Yeah, if I was really smart, I wouldn't be losing my shirt here.
Al's going to be my new associate.
Yeah, so Al Capone comes in from Britain, from Brooklyn. And he forces out, he killed his Big Jim Colosimo, who was getting old. He's running the Chicago Mafia, and he's more interested in women, wine, and the opera. So they assassinate him, murder him. Al Capone sets that up. And then Big Jim Torrio, who is his nephew, is the successor, and they try to assassinate him, but instead wound him, and he gets the message, and he retires. So Al Capone takes over the organization. Now, an honest cop is played by James Gregory, who we think may be the father of Gregory, the newsman on MSNBC, but I'll check on that to verify it. And he plays the role of the Chicago cop who's been trying to bring down Al Capone, and he's jumping on Keeley, who's really, in real life, the guy's name again was Jake Lingle. And he knows that Keeley has taken bribes. Keeley is facilitating things for Al Capone. He works for Al Capone. He gives him information. But Keeley has some lifestyle habits. He's lost over $8,000 at a racetrack. So here's that encounter between the police captain and Keeley, the newsman, or the newsman. Chicago Tribune, but he never wrote any stories. And when he died, when he was murdered, which we'll get into that clip, in an Illinois Central Railroad station, which still exists in Grant Park in Chicago, there was outrage in the newspapers because a newspaper man had been murdered, and they knew it was Capone had his hand in it, like the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. But then when they started checking into this guy's finances, found out he was slimy and dirty, just as the police captain, just the salesman. Al Capone got caught carrying a gun in Pennsylvania, so it was against the law, and so he admitted that he had the gun, so he was arrested and tried and sentenced to 1 year in a Pennsylvania state prison, but he got out on, get this, good behavior. So in the meantime, Keeley, or a.k.a. Jake Lingle, has decided to throw in his lot with Bugs Moran, who was ran the Irish mobs in Chicago, and he had betrayed Capone. Capone found out about it, and here's that encounter.
He is vicious, but at least we know what we're
up against. Sorry about that.
But you, Keeley, you wear a cloak of respectability. You and hundreds of other parasites just like you live off Capone. You get rich, you get power, and you're worse, you're more evil than he is, because without you and those others like you, that corrupt bunch of politicians downtown, Al Capone could never exist.
Oh, now, Captain, I'm just a newspaper man.
Don't call yourself a newspaper man in my office. Those two city editors the mob beat up over in Burnham and Cicero, they're newspaper men. They're still fighting Capone, but you're nothing more than the highest-priced messenger boy in history. I know all about you, Keeley. The way you...
We've got the correct we have so many here. Capone then finds out again, as I was telling you, he finds out that Keeley, a.k.a. Jake Lingle, has betrayed him, and here's that encounter. He's beating up the news band.
Wouldn't double cross me, not much.
You're right. I took the deal. I went with Moran, and you know why? Because... you're through. You're on your way out.
Wait a minute. Now, let's understand each other. You're quitting me from around, right?
You heard it.
All right. Remember one thing.
Anybody quits Capone, it's a big gamble.
Is that so?
That's so.
Oh, yeah. Well, don't threaten me, fat boy. You've been killing your own kind. But you haven't killed a cop, and you'll never touch a newspaper man. Because if you do, that's really gambling.
Now, this is after that, of course, Al Capone gives the order to rub this guy out. And this actually happened in the Illinois Central Railroad Station as Keeley, a.k.a. Jake Lingle, is on his way to the racetrack. And here's that clip. Clips from the movie, which I used in our lectures in the school district and some of the service clubs. So we are going to continue. We have about 1,500 interviews and audio stuff, plus I guess close to 500, maybe 700 in our library, which we use for Western Public Radio, KLWFM, and we'll be back Friday. And I have some interesting guests coming up. Someone who worked in a major law firm, because the legal profession, if you want to call it that, is undergoing major, quote, I'll use Mr. O's word, transformation. Graduates of law schools, even those who pass the bar, can't find jobs. They're saddled with heavy debt that a law school diploma is no longer an application and no longer a passport to, what was it at one time, $150,000. For new graduates from, like, Northwestern University Law School. That was what they were paying here in San Francisco. For somebody who just got out of law school, passed the bar, California State Bar. But no, they can't find jobs now. In fact, we have lawyers on breadlines, and that's a fact. So it's all changing, and, of course, a growing number of people realizing that the legal profession, and we are a country that's becoming over-lawyered. Most of the corruption you see in Congress and the legislators, guess what profession's involved? And so I think people are getting tired of this and tired of how these lawyers get away literally and figuratively with murder. People have not learned, some of these media people also have not learned that, for instance, the Teamsters lawyer who ripped off the Central States Insurance Fund, Alan, I forget his last name. Anyway, he was, I think he was coming out of a restaurant, and he was murdered on the steps of the restaurant, and that was a message. And he thought he was untouchable. And there are other words we have here in San Francisco, the 101 California case, where a big law firm, which was connected to HUD and poverty profiteers, they took this guy's money and telling him, maybe in good faith, that they thought they could get him a Department of Housing and Urban Development contract to build a retirement home. And they took his money and were unable to fulfill what they were committed to do after they took his money. He lost it and went up there and started firing away. And the biggest slaughter of lawyers probably in U.S. history. And it's unfortunate because some innocent people were killed by this guy Giancarlo Ferri. So, and there are other cases where people get mad at lawyers, they feel they've been ripped off, and they go out and get their pistola and start shooting. And we're not condoning that, but this is what happens, and I think we need to get, as a society, a reality check about lawyers. Just because you go to law school does not make a person infallible, omniscient, or know everything, and that's one of the myths, and also the professional arrogance that we're seeing. So we'll be back Friday, and next week we hope to have some of these interviews one person, a young man who just got out of college, went to work for a non-union corporation, big one. They have health care benefits. They pay well, and we're going to get his insight. He's a descendant of one of the great labor leaders in this country. I'm not going to use his name or where he worked. That's the agreement. So we'll have him, and also we'll have probably the best journalist, real journalist, in Chicago, Pat Butler. We've got to set that up, and then some other things I'm working on. So we'll end with our theme, politics and poker. There's a lot of politics, but I don't think anybody's playing poker.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year. Big ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing. Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's it going? We should make Jack Riley the guy.
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y? I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bet out.
Politics and poker, politics and poker, shuffle up and cards and find the joker. He's a game for children, he's a game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, not to bet.
Where's the call on stuff?
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paraphrase.
Bet 'em.
Little trade, good as gold.
I'll say.
Raise your mind.
I'll fall.
I'm cold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in. Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Fanyachinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George
jail. Frank ain't a citizen, and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23. What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot, that's me!
Well, there are a lot of idiots still running for office. This is Peter Paul Brazola. We'll be back Friday with the best of the week and some new material and more on the upcoming interviews. Thank you for listening. It'll be up. You can download this. It's on your iPod. It's Peter Paul Brazola. Good night.